This is ESPN Radio.
The calm before the storm, that is the day before Thanksgiving here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Pet protection comes free with auto collision coverage. Visit progressive.com. And Gojo, we got the slate of games in the NFL coming up tomorrow on Thanksgiving. We got the Detroit Lions and the Chicago Bears. My Dallas Cowboys taking on the Las Vegas Raiders, and in the nightcap, the New Orleans Saints and the Buffalo Bills. And so that got us to thinking maybe we need to tee this up in a different way that makes it more closely related to the eats that we're going to have on Thanksgiving.
Especially after what we heard from Bill Belichick, because I'm not going to lie, nothing sets the table for me quite like bad food takes. We got a ton of them yesterday, and then we got hope from an unlikely hero. Here was Bill Belichick joining WEEI in Boston, and the only thing I know about this is that the phrase starch me up gets used.
Oh, boy. Well, it'd be hard for me to turn down any type of potatoes, so, you know, I'll go with whatever, mashed potatoes, scalloped, or, you know, baked, or however they're made. But, yeah, you bet.
Twice baked. Yeah. Extra sour cream.
Load them up. Load them up. Yeah.
That's Wiggy's favorite.
Maybe a little bacon, Bill?
You bet. Crazy. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Throw some butter on there. Yeah, just, you know, starch me up.
Starch me up. Let that be the rallying cry for the rest of the season for this Patriots team, Chris.
I love it, man. And he sounds like he might be a sweet potato guy too, right? Anything to do with potatoes? Did I hear that correctly?
I think you're right. Listen, I'm not going to put anything past Bill.
Yeah, he might be a sweet potato over pumpkin pie kind of guy. So I don't know. Bill Belichick, he always felt like a head coach that I would have a good time playing for because he's all about winning. But now that I know he's all about the starches on Thanksgiving, makes me love him even more. Like, I have the utmost respect for him. Not only is he the greatest coach in the modern era, but clearly out of the coaches in the National Football League, the man's taste when it comes to foods and how you need to prioritize eating on Thanksgiving. Again, a man that sounds like he has a really good game plan.
Absolutely. Shout out, by the way, to whoever the hero was that just shouted out Al Groton in the background when naming different kinds of potatoes. But I digress. So if Bill Belichick wants to starch it up, then we will do just that. Let's take a look at the Thanksgiving Day matchups, Chris, and let's go main course, side dish, and dessert for each of these games here on the slate as we get ready to fill our plates here. And let's start off with Chicago and Detroit. We got the 12:30 window in this one. The winless Detroit Lions head into this game. Chris, what do you like as the main course of this game?
The main course is actually what's going to happen after the game with Matt Nagy. I mean, after all the rumors that came out at the beginning of the week and his sons being booed at their state playoff game by the opposing team and they're chanting, fire Matt Nagy. I don't know, man. It feels like the writing is on the wall. I know they're going to run out with Andy Dalton, but it feels like my main course is Matt Nagy getting fired. My side dish is the emergence of DeAndre Swift and what he's been able to do the last couple of games. The guy has been on a tear, just balling out. And then, of course, the Chicago Bears defense hasn't been able to stop anybody. And then the dessert would be which backup quarterback gets beat to sleep by the opposing defense. Mm. So that's how I would power rank when it comes to main, side, and dessert for the Bears-Lions game.
I'm with you, Chris. That main dish, no doubt, is us all staring in weird anticipation. This is like when they said the Mayan calendar was going to run out in 2012 here. I've heard a lot of people deny and refute this Matt Nagy situation, but at the same time, we're all still going to be looking, waiting, wondering, hoping that we live to see tomorrow. So there's that for the main. The side dish for me would be the Lions potentially getting their first win. Dan Campbell getting a win on Thanksgiving seems like it is written in the stars. Chris, a hapless Chicago Bears team going up against a guy that all he wants to do is eat an entire turkey, bones and all, whole. That seems like a guy that should win on Thanksgiving. And absolutely the backup quarterback brawl between Tim Doyle and Andy Dalton. The Red Rifle bearded up and ready to rock on Thanksgiving and surely let us all down. Now, we've got that going on in the 12:30 window. As Chris Canty pointed out, great opportunity to take a nap after your first plate. You're not going to miss too much of that one. And you're going to want to be awake because at 4:30, we have got the Las Vegas Raiders on the road in Jerry World against the Dallas Cowboys. Chris, main, side, and dessert for the Cowboys going up against the Raiders.
Well, the main thing is who's going to play for the Dallas Cowboys. And it's still a question mark on whether or not they're going to have CeeDee Lamb concussion protocol. Just got word from Clarence Hill that Tyron Smith is going to be available, but no Amari Cooper. So I think that has to be the main. That's going to be the focus. We would admit that the Cowboys are a better team than the Las Vegas Raiders. That's just what it is. The side dish, I would say, is Kellen Moore having more of a commitment to the running game. No pun intended. But the Cowboys need to get back on the ground game and using Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. They got away from that against the Kansas City Chiefs defense. They became one-dimensional, and that's the last thing you want to do against a Vegas Raiders defense that features two pass rushers in Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby. So I think that would be my side, and then the dessert would be, can the Raiders get off the schneid? Can the Cowboys kind of balance things out? The Cowboys have been in this mode where they win one, lose one ever since the bye week. And the Las Vegas Raiders have lost the last three and fell from being in the pole position in the AFC West to the cellar of the AFC West. So in a get right situation, which team gets back right? That would be my dessert for this game.
That would absolutely fit in this one, Chris. I'll go top to bottom and agree with you. Who's going to be available? And we heard from Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, talking about Amari Cooper and his absence being on the COVID-19 list.
You check me at the door in a football team. The facts are it is a wee thing when you walk into the locker room. And anybody is being counted on to pull his weight. Now, Amari Cooper is outstanding, folks. He's one of the highest character guys that you will ever be around in any area. But this is a classic case of how it can impact a team when people are, at the end of the day, this is not individual, it is team. You cannot win anything individually. But the point is that this popped us. This did pop us.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Jerry Jones, understandably upset there. Michael Irvin has echoed those comments on First Take. Chris, we know this became a football decision in a lot of ways based on the NFL's protocol. And so him missing has been important. Tyron Smith, absolutely the side dish on this for me. I think that's the thing I'm most excited to watch this game because he seems to change that team so much. But I want to go to Rick Bisaccia, the coach for the Las Vegas Raiders, in the interim basis here. We have a sneaky revenge game built into this one, Chris. His second longest tenure in the NFL was with the Cowboys from 2013 to 2017, leading special teams as well there. And so he get a chance to come back home to the Star and see if he can upset City this thing a little bit. Now,
nice. I like that.
We love a little revenge game here. It is a dish best served cold, like certain desserts. But I digress. Let's get to the last one on this. Chris, the nightcap here. Buffalo at New Orleans. Two teams very much on a bit of a slide here. Buffalo losers of two of their last three. New Orleans certainly losers of a lot more than that heading into this one. So main side and dessert, how are we approaching this one?
Oh, for the Buffalo Bills is, can you beat a team with an actual winning record? The only time they did that this season was against the Miami Dolphins in week two, and the Dolphins barely won that game against the Patriots in their regular season opener. Save it. It was a Damian Harris fumble that opened the door for that to happen. So can the Bills actually beat a team that has a winning record? That will be my first thing. The second thing is, can the Bills figure out a way to beat the cover two against the New Orleans Saints? You know that they see the most cover two in the National Football League, even more than the Kansas City Chiefs, and they just have not had an answer for it. So it's just one of those situations where Josh Allen is going to have to find a way to be able to overcome that and to either get teams to run a different coverage or to be able to find ways where they can beat that cover two over the top. So that's the other part. And then on the Saints side, can you hold on to your playoff spot? That would be my dessert for this one. Can you hold on to your playoff spot? Right now, they're in one of those last wild card spots in the NFC, but if they lose, they're going to be on the outside looking in. So that would be my big question. They got bounced by the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles offense hung 40 on that Saints defense like they were playing Madden. So that would be my dessert is, can the Saints hold on to playoff position? So I would go the Buffalo Bills beating a quality team, a team that doesn't have a losing record, as the main. The side would be Josh Allen finding a way to beat cover two, and the dessert would be the Saints holding on to the playoff spot.
Chris, love all of that you're serving up here. And I think that Saints playoff spot, slowly but surely coming out of grasp, could have a lot of implication on how they deal with some of the key injuries on their team. We know Alvin Kamara been missing time with injury. Both of their starting offensive tackles in Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead. And those are all important foundational elements for you as a franchise going forward that are going to be at risk throughout the rest of the season here. That would certainly be my main in this one. You mentioned the passing game, beating that cover too. I would say for this, too, Stephon Diggs and company here, this Saints secondary on the other side, I believe, ranked 22nd against the pass in the NFL. Can that finally be a place where you get some of the same issues we've been seeing for Kansas City? Can you manufacture some run after the catch type situations for what do we know is a talented wide receiver core with Stephon Diggs, with Emmanuel Sanders built in there, even Cole Beasley, whose opinions we may not like, but his production we know can be an important part of that offense. And then dessert here, though. I do like this idea of a throwback. We talked about a revenge game in the other one here. The Saints know a thing or two about Stephon Diggs here. Remember, he was on the winning side of the Minneapolis Miracle in that 2018 playoff game from not too long ago. And I'm sure things like that may come up over the course of this game here. And so just seeing if this gets late in this contest here, because we know the Saints allow teams to do that. In the last three games, they have scored exactly zero first quarter points and managed to only score 13 in the first half in that span. So they are going to let plenty of teams hang around in these contests here, potentially make it interesting late.
No doubt about it. Not to mention Emmanuel Sanders being a part of the mix in this game as well, once a former New Orleans Saint. So I'm just saying there's a little bit of a revenge factor that's in there for both sides of this thing.
Plenty of revenge on the line, but plenty of great receivers that Chris just mentioned. Coming up next, though, are any of those groups involved in the best tandem of the NFL in the wide receiver core? We'll give you Chris Candy's top five next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, feels like, you know, on Thanksgiving, you take inventory. You're looking around Thanksgiving Eve, making sure you got everything in the kitchen, all the ingredients that the folks that are going to be doing the cooking need in order to make the meal. And so feels like this is an appropriate time when we start talking about NFL and offenses that quarterbacks have the ingredients that they need to make the meal. And one of the things that Dan Orlovsky said earlier this week might have stoked a little bit of controversy, at least around these parts when it comes to receiver tandems.
Yeah, so we had Dan Orlovsky and Ryan Clark on NFL Live this week talking about what we saw this past weekend here. The Minnesota Vikings said a very loud and clear message, not only about the state of the Green Bay Packers defense, but about what's in their wide receiver room with Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. Dan Orlovsky and Ryan Clark went so far as to say on Get Up on Tuesday that is the best in the league.
Just telling you, the Minnesota Vikings are quietly a dangerous team in the NFC. They got five losses by 19 points.
Yeah, I just
they're a good football team.
That is absolutely, and it's not even quiet to me. Like when you watch, like if you just watch the
games,
film of this offense can flat out go. It's all based on how Kirk Cousins plays.
Correct.
Because when he gets the ball to the right people, these skill guys are unstoppable.
The last two games, he's 30 of 39 for 459 yards. To Thielen and Justin Jefferson. Yep. It's the best wide receiver duo in the NFL. And the whole NFC needs to understand, to slow down that offense, you got to stop those guys.
So, best in the whole NFL. Pretty bold claim. Chris Canty, I know you disagree here, and you have actually compiled a list of your own.
Yeah, I feel like I had to put together something, right? Because if you're going to disagree with what Dan or Ryan Clark have to say, you better come with some receipts. So I'm going to go with my top five receiver duos in the NFL as of week 12. Now, I'm going to kick this off with a little bit of a cheat code because I'm going with the group out in Kansas City, and that would be one Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Now, I get it. Travis Kelce is a tight end, but as much as he's detached from the formation, you might as well call him a wide receiver. I mean, that duo has 151 catches, 1,753 yards and 13 touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, Kansas City is the number two passing offense in the National Football League. So I feel like you got to put some respect on their names when we start talking about the top receiver duo. So let's move it along to the next one. Okay, number four, because I guess I just skipped all the way to number one. But let's go with number four, which would be Keenan Allen and Mike Williams out with the L.A. Chargers. 120 catches, 1,515 yards, and 9 touchdowns. These dudes just make it happen. And case in point would be what we saw on Sunday Night Football with Mike Williams catching the game-winning touchdown from Justin Herbert. Like, these dudes are a problem. They're matchup nightmares. Keenan Allen is always open. And Mike Williams' catch radius, I don't know, man. There ain't too many people that have that kind of catch radius around the National Football League. So that is my number four receiver tandem.
All right, perfect. So we have the number four receiver tandem. We already gave up the goods on number one. Yep. So, Chris, why don't you give us who the fifth-ranked receiver tandem is as we completely go out of order on this?
Okay, I feel like – well, this is kind of like a Thanksgiving Day plate, right? You don't do things in order. You don't eat in order. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like a feel thing. But let's go with the number five receiver tandem. That would be CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper, and I put those guys in the order of how they ranked in terms of who's wide receiver one and who's wide receiver two. But 94 catches between the two of them, 1,323 yards and 11 touchdowns. This is one of the most explosive offenses in the National Football League, and these two dudes make it happen. It feels like the Cowboys' identity has transformed overnight from a run-first team to a passing outfit. And a lot of that is because you got these two guys on the outside. So that is my number five receiver tandem.
All right. This is all, by the way, guys that you want to see as part of a great ticket. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seats Rewards is your ticket to more tickets. Vivid Seats, life happens live. Now, Chris Canty has two more that we need to get on this list here, and because some of you are going to be going to coverage of the final of the Maui Jim Invitational on basketball, we have got to take a quick break here. So coming up next, we will get to hear from not only Jeff Dickerson about the state of the Chicago Bears, Chris Canty's top two wide receiver tandems in the NFL, and some of the ways that you are becoming your parents as we near the Thanksgiving holiday. That's all coming up next here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Gojo, we know we got the NFL triple header tomorrow on Thanksgiving. And the leadoff is the Lions versus the Bears game. And we know embattled head coach Matt Nagy. The reports earlier this week were that he could potentially be fired right after this game. And so, of course, that would prompt Matt Nagy to have to address those reports in his weekly press conference. So here we have Matt Nagy talking to the Chicago media about the reports that he could be dismissed after Thursday's game.
Matt, there's a report today that you've been informed that this will be your last game as president.
That is not accurate. You know, I have not... I have great communication with ownership, with George and Ted and Ryan, but I have not had any discussions.
And now, with that being said, we're going to go out to the Goodyear hotline to bring on ESPN NFL Nation Bears reporter Jeff Dickerson. And Jeff, I mean, you just heard the sound, the reports that Matt Nagy could potentially be fired after this game. How real is that in terms of the Bears moving on with him after this game on a short week?
Yeah, Chris, I mean, it's real that Matt Nagy is on the hot seat. I mean, the Bears have lost five in a row. His offense now for three-plus years just hasn't worked. And that's why he got the job in the first place, is because he's an Andy Reid guy and from Philadelphia and Kansas City, was going to bring that system to Chicago and kind of pump life into an offense that was really morbid under John Fox and Mark Trestman. And it just hasn't worked. So, I mean, he has a lot of pressure on him. As for him getting fired tomorrow, I don't see it. You know, the Bears have never fired a head coach midseason before. I'm not saying we can't get to that point if they continue to have this tailspin go on and on. But, yeah, as far as him actually being let go tomorrow, that was never really something that I truly believe was going to happen. But make no mistake, he is not a popular guy in Chicago. The fan base is heated up. The season is almost lost for the most part at 3-7. So he is under just an enormous amount of pressure to win some games here, turn this around, and even that might not be enough ultimately to save his job.
Jeff, you mentioned the fan base. Have we heard anything coming out of this locker room about the temperature surrounding Matt Nagy and whether or not that group still believes in him?
Yeah, Mike, it's so hard this year with no locker room access, you know. I mean, it's so different. You guys know, an open locker room, that's where you get all the good stuff. That's where you can talk to people and really get an idea of what's taking place. And everything is so scripted now and so controlled. No players, you guys know. No, there's not going to be a unanimous love of a head coach in the locker room by every single player. But I think enough guys believe in Matt Nagy to the point where they're playing hard. I mean, they almost beat the Ravens last week. That was a freaky game. I mean, the Steelers game, they came back and they led there at the very end. And only to botch it again. It's not as if they're laying down for these teams. They're playing hard, which to me is always the sign that guys are still invested and guys are still bought in. But, I mean, I think that, you know, the players probably want some clarity on the situation. And really, we're going to see tomorrow how they respond. It's a short turnaround, coming off another crushing defeat. It's a team they should win. They should beat the Lions. They beat them earlier this year. If they come out tomorrow and take care of business on Thursday, then I think you know how the locker room feels. But if they come out and they go through the motions and they make this a game and they potentially lose, that's going to be a road that I know that Matt Nagy doesn't want to go down. The organization doesn't want to go down, because that would be pretty jarring. But yeah, I think for the most part, the guys still, you know, he's their head coach and they respect that, and they're going out there and they're still playing hard.
Talking with ESPN Bears reporter Jeff Dickerson on Canty and Golic Jr. Jeff, where are we at with Justin Fields' injury? I know he had the ribs against the Baltimore Ravens. He's been ruled out of this game. Mm-hmm. Where are we at with him, and when can we expect to see him back in the starting lineup?
I think in a perfect world, he would be back for that game against Arizona on December 5th at Soldier Field. Now, Matt Nagy, aside from all the questions about his job yesterday, did mention that, you know, when healthy, Justin Fields is still the starting quarterback. He's not going to lose his job like Andy Dalton did earlier this year. But obviously the ribs are not in a position where he can play on Thursday. There was obviously a significant bruise there. He was hit a lot against Baltimore. I'm not saying there was one specific hit. I think it was more of a cumulative effect over the course of that game. But they're going to play it safe with him. But I think, you know, the weekend off after the Thursday game, not playing, and then getting ready for next week. I think ideally, internally, that's what they want. They'll have to know for sure, though, when they get him back on the practice field next week, what he can and cannot do.
Jeff, you mentioned the hot seat very clearly around Matt Nagy. That obviously connected to Justin Fields and the rest of his season here. Is there anything that can happen for them realistically on the field at this point that you think allows Matt Nagy to keep his job?
It's going to be tough. I mean, they could win out, I guess, potentially, but I don't think they're going to do that. You know, Nagy has one more year left on his contract. That's always something to keep in mind when you're talking about the Bears. They don't like to, you know, buy too many guys out of deals. But it just hasn't worked the way that it was designed to work. And I just keep going back to that offense, and that's just really hard to defend. I mean, when you're constantly ranking near the bottom of almost every important offensive category except for rushing, that's really alarming. And I really think too that the Ravens game, albeit it was close, you know, they did not have Lamar Jackson, and they were coming off a bye, the Bears, and to not find a way to win that game with as limited as Baltimore was offensively, that's going to be a real indictment on them. I know the ownership is going to look at this game on Thursday against the Lions and weigh that pretty heavily too on the short turnaround. How do they prepare? But yeah, it's not trending in the right direction. I mean, if they miss the playoffs and they, you know, only finish with like 5 wins, I think the story pretty much writes itself, and they're in the market for a new head coach this offseason.
Jeff, you mentioned ownership and assessing the state of Matt Nagy's job security. There's a report that came out this week that suggested that ownership was more responsible in pulling the plug on Andy Dalton as the starter and giving Justin Fields the reins going back to Week 4. How much legitimacy should we give to that report? And is that the case in terms of the dynamic within the organization in making football decisions?
Now, typically, no, that's not the case. George McCaskey, Ted Phillips really are not supposed to make any football-related decisions. And for the most part, they stay out of it. I think that, you know, they were very enthusiastic about Justin Fields. I think a lot of people were. I think Nagy was a little hesitant because, you know, he saw him every day in practice, and he, you know, knows Andy Dalton and you know, was kind of wanted to maybe err on the side of caution. So I don't know if they were completely the reason why they made the switch, but I can tell you that they were big fans of Justin Fields. And, you know, ownership sometimes, guys, they care about the bottom line. They care about, you know, selling tickets and excitement and jerseys. And I hate to say this, but Andy Dalton does not do that. Justin Fields does. Andy Dalton might be, you know, better prepared to be the quarterback this year than Justin Fields. But the bottom line is, you know, for business sake, it was better to have Justin Fields out there. So I know that was their piece of their, you know, sort of collaboration. And obviously, you know, more people felt that way than not. and that's why Justin Fields got the job from Andy Dalton a couple weeks ago.
Going to make all of this for a very interesting Thanksgiving in the Chicago area tomorrow as the Chicago Bears take on the winless Detroit Lions in that early Thanksgiving window. Jeff, enjoy the game. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
ESPN NFL Nation reporter Jeff Dickerson covering the Bears for us here, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, coming up next, in the midst of all of the sounds of bing bong that you heard last night.
Bing bong!
Bang! Did we also quietly see more and more cracks forming around this Lakers foundation? We will get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, for a second consecutive year, the Lakers were playing in the Garden without LeBron James. Last year, it was because of injury. This year was because of a suspension. Of course, we know he hit Isaiah Stewart in the face the other night, Detroit Pistons forward, which prompted Adam Silver in the league to levy that form of discipline. But that being said, I fully expected a front court player from Kentucky to dominate in that game in the Garden. I just didn't think it would end up being Julius Randle. But that's the way it was. And then even when Julius Randle got in foul trouble, the Lakers still didn't take advantage of it in the fourth quarter. And so right now, I'm pretty sick about my squad right now, falling below 500 again on the season. It's just getting pretty despicable. So everybody's now asking the question, are the Lakers too reliant on LeBron James? I feel like that's an obvious answer, but what say you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the obvious answer because it's true, right? This Lakers team wasn't constructed with any real, like, grand coherent plan in mind, right? Bringing Carmelo Anthony over here, who has no doubt had a resurgent career since he missed that year in the league inexplicably to most people here. Russell Westbrook is a great player, a former MVP and a triple-double machine. Like, we know all that stuff. But none of the way about these parts fit together made sense to us this offseason. And the only thing that we could come up with over the top of it was, Chris, well, LeBron James is going to be there, and Anthony Davis is really good when he's healthy, and so we trust that core to go a long way. And that core has not been on the court for extended minutes for this team, and Anthony Davis has not taken the next step, and so you backed the wrong horses at this point in the season. It's a long year, but right now, confidence should be hard to come by because the thing you thought you'd have to rely on has completely fallen flat.
No question about it. And with Anthony Davis, I get it. He wasn't necessarily feeling his best, a little bit under the weather. But I'm tired of the excuses with him, right? It's either injuries, he's out of shape, or he's not feeling well. Like, at some point, you're going to have to push through it knowing that you're missing the best player on the team and you're the second best player. So that has to be the expectation anytime LeBron James isn't on the court, that Anthony Davis is the guy that the team needs to run through. Meanwhile, it had to be Russell Westbrook last night because Anthony Davis wasn't at his best. And even though the Brody dropped the triple-double, we know what comes along with that, all of the turnovers. And you had six turnovers last night. Not to mention, defensively, Russell Westbrook was a liability down the stretch for the Los Angeles Lakers. And Emmanuel Quickly, not Derrick Rose, not Kemba Walker, Emmanuel Quickly was giving Russell Westbrook the business and hit 4 3-pointers in the fourth quarter. Remember I mentioned that stretch where Julius Randle was sitting out. He got his fifth foul with 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, goes to the bench, and all the New York Knicks bench does is proceed to go on a 15-6 run. That is unacceptable if you're the LA Lakers. When you got Alec Burks, Emmanuel Quickly, and Obi Toppin, who are fine players but not superstar players, on the court leading the charge for the Knicks to take control of a game that you had to fight your way back into in the third quarter, like, that's the part for me that makes it hard to digest, hard to stomach as a Lakers fan. This is a team that has championship aspirations. They're supposed to be on a different level than the New York Knicks. And while that may be true, it's not the level that the Lakers fans was hoping for. They're supposed to be above the Knicks, and right now they're below them. In terms of trust factor, you trust the New York Knicks on a night-to-night basis more than you trust the Los Angeles Lakers. Hell, the Knicks have won 9 of the last 11 games. Look at where the Lakers are at. And then when you consider the conference that they play in, seeing what the Phoenix Suns are doing, seeing what the Golden State Warriors are doing, yeah, I'm concerned as a Lakers fan, and even with LeBron James on this court, I'm not quite sure that this team has what it takes to be able to win a championship. I just don't know if they can do it, and The one thing I'll say about LeBron, if he does it, like the degree of difficulty that he's going to have to do it with is going to be, you know, turned up to the max with this group of players. But this is the group of players that LeBron James chose to rock with, which is why there's got to be so much pressure on the King to be able to get this done, because these are the guys that he hand-selected. He was the one that wanted to ship Kuz over and other players over to the Wizards in order to bring back Russell Westbrook. And by default, they didn't have enough money to be able to sign Alex Caruso, who left in free agency. He was the one that wanted to move heaven and earth to get Anthony Davis. You got him. Now what? He wanted DeAndre Jordan. He wanted Carmelo Anthony, Malik Monk, all of these guys. He wanted all of these dudes. So you've got the players that you want. Now there's no excuses for you not to deliver. But based on what we've seen this Lakers team do in the first 19 games of the season, I'm concerned. Even though we haven't even got to Christmas yet, I'm concerned about what this group is going to develop into.
Issues abound for this team here. Kendrick Perkins, our ESPN NBA analyst, took a shot at diagnosing these things earlier this morning on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max.
They don't have enough role guys. You know what I mean? And I hate to say it, but when you look at a guy like Carmelo Anthony, you know, when you look at a guy like THT, we know that they're capable of having big scoring nights. But at times, that's not what you need on the floor. You need that Caldwell Pope who's going to chase guys over, get up over screens and get into the ball. When I look at the Lakers, I'm like, nah, this ain't it right now. I just don't understand. They play too much my-turn basketball.
Ken Angola Jr., we're brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. And that's really, I think, the strange part of all this, Chris, is the my turn basketball that Perk mentioned here. The idea of being a defensive liability. Like, even when LeBron first got here, we understand it wasn't perfect. You ended up doing the trade deadline overhaul that gets Anthony Davis out of New Orleans, gets him over into a Lakers uniform. And there were things that you had to go through. But on the other side of that, they used the unique gifts at the core of that team to be one of the best defensive teams in basketball. LeBron James played resurgent ball on that side of the floor here. And even last year, you had a little bit more of that to hang on. And right now, I understand, and I will always hold out all final judgment on this team until we see LeBron James playing extended double-digit games in the uniform, consecutive games, to understand what this team can really be as you work out the rotational stuff early in the pre-December 25th NBA. But man, oh man, the rest of this is so uninspired that the biggest question, that what are they going to do when LeBron James is off the court in key minutes in the postseason? Because that's what it always comes down to, failing grades across the board right now.
Yeah, and the thing that you pointed out with the defense has to be a serious concern, right? Because even though they're playing with much more pace, and a lot of that has to be attributed to Russell Westbrook, defensively, a lot of those guys on the court are liabilities, and it used to be that Anthony Davis would clean a whole lot of that up, but he's not playing at the same level defensively that we saw him in the championship season a couple of years ago. So, yeah, I'm worried about it. I mean, yesterday, the perimeter defense was atrocious in Madison Square Garden against the Knicks. The Knicks shot 44% from the three-point line with 15 makes. Like, that's a problem. You got to get that fixed. They hit seven of them in the first quarter, so you would think that they would tighten that up as the game went along, and that's not how things unfolded. So the Lakers got a lot of problems to fix, and a lot of it is on the defensive end, and I'm not sure LeBron James can clean all of it up.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Coming up next, we will get you right for one of the most important days of the calendar year tomorrow. Next, here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.